Hello and welcome to Talking Therapies, a podcast made together with Psychologies Magazine and the UK Council for Psychotherapy, or UKCP for short. I'm Susie Walker and I'm the Editor-in-Chief at Psychologies. Each month on Talking Therapies, we will be talking to a UKCP therapist about a range of topics. Has the internet left you worse than it found you? Perhaps you've seen a horrible video or faced online harassment. In this episode, we're unpacking cyber trauma and the impact it can have on our emotional well-being.
When we are engaged in using a device, we are approximately the same distance that we would be from breast to eye in terms of babies, so that's called the eye gaze distance. And what I've noticed is when we're engaged with technology, we tend to be holding it or sitting around about 30 to 40 centimetres away from the technology. We are given a false sense of security by our body, and this is all based on something called polyvagal theory. And what happens is we're not as prepared as we would be in the real world, which is called the corporeal, to kind of deal with what we encounter. So that might be text, it might be videos, it can be sound. There's lots of variants, but obviously we're using technology and our body tells us that we're in a fairly safe space.
Yeah.
So the way that the trauma affects us is very different to that in which we would experience it in real everyday life.
That was UKCP psychotherapist Catherine Nibbs. By trade, Catherine is an engineer. After leaving the army, Catherine started a career in computing, working for some of the largest companies in the UK before training as a psychotherapist. Catherine is now a clinical and doctoral researcher who specialises in child and adult trauma. Shortly, Catherine will be sitting down with the UKCP CEO, Sarah Niblock, to discuss cyber trauma and how to recognise the signs. But first, here are some comments from people we spoke to on the street.
Yes, I do think people are way less likely to report crime experienced online, simply because it feels like all of our personal spheres, and it kind of feels less real than the real world.
We do not really see crime committed digitally as something, because it's not really affecting you physically, but emotionally it might cause trouble.
It's very difficult to report a crime that is done online. It feels like it's not real, isn't it? It's feel like there is a ghost who is doing something to you, and you kind of don't know whether it's the reality or is it in your head. And if you don't speak to anyone about it, it might be quite difficult. And so I would suggest people who feel like they're experiencing some crime online, just share it with your best friend, or you know, share it with a few people and ask their opinion.
It seems to be really important to establish boundaries, personal boundaries, with use of the internet. I've read a lot about sleep hygiene and the kind of mental health hygiene that it is to leave your phone at the end of the day and having really strict break away from it.
I have done digital detox myself. I went climbing in Nepal, which was absolutely amazing. I did some hiking and trekking there. And I haven't used my phone for 8 days. And it was so refreshing. People were actually just talking to each other as opposed to being on their phones with their head down. And I really, really recommend it.
From online bullying to internet exploitation, so many things on the internet can leave us traumatized. Did you know that a quarter of British adults have experienced cyberbullying, and almost half of those cyberbullied failed to report it to the online platform? The same YouGov poll also found that 5% of respondents had been cyberstalked. The internet can be a dark place that leaves you emotionally vulnerable. In this episode, we will be discussing internet trauma and the importance of creating boundaries on and offline.
So what is cyber trauma?
There's a very long academic definition, which is still a work in progress, and it's to do with technology. But essentially, a cyber trauma is any trauma that it's experienced through, with, or from any internet-ready device. And that can happen now, It can happen in the future, or it can be something that's already happened that reoccurs later on in life.
That's very interesting. So that might include what, looking at the media or somebody on the phone to you? Is it, sounds like quite a broad category.
It is. Yeah. It's very overarching, because obviously when you're doing research, you've got to have a very synchronistic and tiny minute definition. But I wasn't able to do that because this was... In terms of digital space, it's very difficult to label something as one particular phenomena. And an example of that is cyberbullying. So that can be often referred to as harassment. It can be trolling. It can be revenge porn. There's really, really quite a lot of definitions out of there. So cyber trauma was to do with... and it came about because of an experience I had where when I first began using Facebook... I added lots and lots of school friends, as lots of us do, because we wanted to look fairly popular with everybody else. And somebody put a picture of me up. It wasn't just me, it was my classmates, from when I was in the secondary school. And at that time, I'd had a really, really bad accident. And I used to wear braces and I had big curly hair. And it really, really rubber banded me back to that time when I was bullied. And what I did was I panicked. I then removed the photo. I asked people not to put it back up. I kind of took those friends off Facebook, and it really got me into a state of going, oh my goodness, even if I'm not on that Facebook page, there is the potential for this image to still be there. And from that, I started to look at what was happening with the young people. I started to look at what was happening in terms of technology. So my background is in technology, computing, IT, and realised this phenomenon is increasing. It's going to get more complex. And the way that the cyber trauma definition is going at the moment is it's even including AI and machine learning.
Wow. So as fast as technology evolves exponentially, this is going to radiate much further. Is it a relatively new phenomenon, though, cyber trauma? Is it related to the proliferation of a particular medium?
I would say that in terms of the word trauma, which I'm aware that we now use that terminology in everyday language, what I am noticing is it's to do with how we interact with technology. So to make a very complex theory simple, when we are engaged in using a device, we are approximately the same distance that we would be from breast to eye in terms of babies. So that's called the eye gaze distance. And what I've noticed is when we're engaged with technology, we tend to be holding it or sitting around about 30 to 40 centimetres away from the technology. We are given a false sense of security by our body, and this is all based on something called polyvagal theory. And what happens is we're not as prepared as we would be in the real world, which is called the corporeal, to kind of deal with what we encounter. So that might be text, it might be videos, it can be sound. There's lots of variants, but obviously we're using technology and our body tells us that we're in a fairly safe space.
Yeah.
So the way that the trauma affects us is very different to that in which we would experience it in real everyday life.
Goodness me. Tell me a little bit more about that. I mean, what does that feel like? You've literally got your phone in front of you and then you stumble across something that, that's quite shocking or alarming. How does it tend to unfold?
So this has come out of both practice and my PhD research. If you were watching two cars out on the street and they were kind of getting too close, your body would begin to go into the fight or flight state, and you would anticipate that this is going to happen. And quite often you do not get those kind of clues in terms of when you were looking at digital media. Now, the concept of this cyber trauma is going to get even more complex when you start to look at virtual reality, which is a highly immersive environment. So you don't get the clues of...
You don't get that kind of pre-warning, as
absolutely.
You might, where you kind of will brace and be able to react very quickly and perhaps self-protectively towards something that could be frightening or traumatic.
Yeah.
I suppose with online, it just suddenly hits you completely out of the blue.
Yeah,
right.
And what clients tend to say is they were revolted, disgusted, taken aback. They're kind of at the far end of the spectrum of how people react to a trauma rather than... It was a little bit shocking. People will reflect in their language that they were really, really affected by it. And then what I found with the younger people, they will keep replaying the image over and over again. And obviously you don't have to replay it in your head anymore. You can go back and visually rewatch and watch and share, and then revisit that image, that video, that text, and you can go back to it time and time and time again.
How do you know you're experiencing cyber trauma, though, from what you're seeing?
Fairly similar to how you would notice if you were feeling excessively stressed or traumatised by something you'd seen in the real world. So the example I give there is wanting to go back and rewatch the video. Now, that might be part of your process in terms of trying to heal or process what it is that you've experienced. But you might find that you are slightly agitated, that you feel restless, that you feel as though you're kind of daydreamy, dissociative. You might find that you are playing the image over again in your head, and it's usually feelings of confusion and body dysregulation is how we would recognise it in terms of normal trauma, in terms of the real world, not that there is a normal trauma. So it would be about your own personal experience. Mm. Are you replaying what somebody said, what you could have said? Have you tried to delete the post? Are you now looking for excessive information? So I worked with a lot of the Manchester Arena clients. Mm. And mm. after the incident, what they were doing was constantly searching the internet to find even more material about the event, A, for purposes of healing and to understand what had happened to them. But each time they went and found some of the material, it obviously re-traumatised them that little bit more. Mm. So it's all about what you notice in yourself. Mm. And obviously this can be from cyberbullying all the way through to, you know, material that's really, really difficult.
Mm. Gosh. Some of the things that you've described already, you kind of think some of that would actually be a crime if it was in real life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're witnessing things sometimes which obviously are quite illegal or certainly horrifying, incredibly violent. Do you find that people are unsure perhaps about reporting some of the stuff that they see yeah. online to the authorities?
Absolutely. So recently we've had the Online Harms White Bill, which is a government policy that's going to be rolled out in terms of making social media companies accountable for the material that's on their platforms. But quite often that material is shared for a number of reasons. So for example, it might be a person who's trying to highlight animal abuse or child abuse, and that material gets shared with the concept of trying to educate. Unfortunately, what that does do is it then there's a proclivity to you becoming traumatised by seeing it. But there are lots and lots of incidents that might come under different laws, such as the Miscommunication Act. There's Misuse of Computer Act. There is an online law. There's also stalking laws. There are laws around revenge porn. There are laws such as one that came in last year called upskirting. So this is about people taking photographs of ladies' skirts without their permission. And more often than not, people don't always understand that it is illegal behaviour that they're watching or witnessing, or sometimes understanding that the things that people write about each other can be tantamount to harassment, it can be tantamount to defamation of character. And having that understanding is difficult because currently we don't actually have the laws in the public domain for people mm. to understand, mm-hmm. nor do we always have the reporting procedures on the platforms in a way that people can understand them. So we are moving to a better informed society, but right now the Online Harms Bill is probably the best
Yes.
Move that we've had so far in terms of this.
Yes, indeed. But it is so difficult because every part of our life is connected to the internet
mm-hmm.
these days. It's very difficult to say, well, just have a digital detox, mm-hmm. isn't it? Because mm-hmm. we have to work and it's so much around our daily functionality. What advice would you give to those individuals, people who might be listening to this and thinking, yeah, this reflects my life, but somehow I've got to move forward and keep going?
Again, it's very similar to working with clients in therapy who have experienced trauma. For example, they've been assaulted, there's been domestic violence, sexual abuse, that actually these people still have to function in day-to-day society. So it's understanding that most technology is within households, and the figures are really quite astounding, actually. I think Childwise did a study a couple of years ago, and it showed that over 67% of households have two or more tablets or two or more devices that are available to connect with the internet. So this is about being mindful and conscious of the platforms that you use, How often you're using them. I actually academically disagree with the terminology of screen time, so I won't actually use that. But there is something about be mindful of what you're doing, what you're engaging in, and make it purposeful. So if you are a young person and you've been given homework to do, try to ensure that you are only visiting the sites where the homework is rather than going off on a YouTube tangent or visiting Facebook every 2 minutes. And the way technology is advancing, there are apps to help you do this. They can block particular sites. So it's really about a little bit of research about how you can help yourself, but being aware that not all platforms are dangerous, and it's not the apps that are the problem, it's the users, and that's really no different to the real corporeal world with, you know, cars are not dangerous, it's the people who drive it, knives, it's
it can be dangerous if you're not doing that. But I think what you're saying is that it's that sort of sense of self-awareness, that checking in with yourself. I mean, you know, I know that you can go into all kinds of wormholes on the internet, can't you, if you're fascinated in finding out more and more information. But then you say, well, where did that 2 hours just go? I mean, it's having that check in with yourself and saying, why did I even go on that search engine in the first place?
And I find myself doing that with journal articles. So, you know, as much as I kind of write about this, I talk about it, I am also a recipient and victim of doing this myself.
I mean, it sounds like there's a real role for psychotherapy here and a real benefit from working with a psychotherapist in the midst of all this, because it is so hard to self-manage in a world where you can't avoid being online.
So for me, in terms of working with the clients, so this is based on at least 6 or 7 years of working with this issue, particularly with young people and children, and that's what I am. I'm a child and adult therapist, so I spend a lot of time working with young people. This is about recognizing what platforms they use, what it is that they're doing there, who they're speaking to. So I did a piece of research for my master's in terms of cyberbullying, and one of the comments that was coming back quite a lot was, well, just turn it off. And realistically, we have to learn that that isn't the solution to the problem. It's about really understanding the foreverness of the internet. It's about understanding how we can assist our clients in terms of issues such as grief. Examples such as Facebook, where they will remind you, this is what was happening 5 years ago, this is what happened a year ago, and that can be re-traumatising. So as therapists, we really need to open our eyes to what this technology is, how it can impact our clients, and allowing them the space to really explain and explore the anxiety that they might feel, which is absolutely congruent with how it is, because if something exists on the internet, there is the potential that it can come back, it can be reshared, it can be revisited. So it's sitting with clients and allowing them the open space to connect with the issue.
I've just found this so fascinating, because you have made that clear. I mean, psychotherapists have a very, very tough job, because on the one hand, you sort of got to help people make sense of, as you say, corporeal reality, this lived relationship with the material world. But then the whole psychological complication when that world is virtual seems to set off a whole array of other processes. It's a fascinating area, and clearly for you one that is, well, we're only really at the beginning of that journey, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Technology seems to be transforming so exponentially.
It is, and
5 years we could be here having new, all new types of media formats.
It's going to change the landscape of psychotherapy. There's already research around avatar therapy and virtual reality therapy. And, you know, the way that technology is currently increasing, it might be within the next decade before clients are virtually in your therapy room and you are not actually in a therapy room, you're at home. So there's so many advances, which I'm really excited about, but also I have it's the double-edged sword. As soon as I see technology advancing, I then sit and think, oh my goodness, what problems is this going to bring up? And how do we deal with that in terms of a therapeutic relationship and a therapeutic reparation?
Oh, it's so fascinating to hear that the work and the innovation that you and other colleagues in UKCP are doing with that. Thank you.
That was UKCP's psychotherapist Catherine Nibbs speaking to Sarah Niblock, the CEO of the UK Council for Psychotherapy. If, after listening to that, you feel you could benefit from some talking time with a psychotherapist, then go to the Find a Therapist section of the UKCP website and have a look through. The website is www.psychotherapy.org.uk and look for the Find a Therapist tab. We'll also be discussing the emotional impact of cyber trauma in the Psychologies magazine this month, or you can find us online at psychologies.co.uk. We'll be doing a podcast each month with some of the UKCP's psychotherapists, so to remember to like and subscribe to our channel to hear it first. It also helps others find us too, so join us again next month. Till then, thank you for listening and take good care of yourselves.